Welcome to Zoomed Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. This program will take you behind the scenes and deepen your understanding about the patterns and perspectives of leadership today. Now, here's your host, John Schmidt.
Well, hello. Welcome, everyone, again to this week's edition of Zoomed Leadership. I am, of course, your host, John Schmidt. And again today, as I so like to do, I'll be taking us out to the big picture, into the up close and personal, and toward a world of desirable futures. You know, those that I always like to say are rich with the essence of constant renewal. Well, great to be back today, folks. And I would like to start perhaps today up close and personal. And I would like you, if you would, to tune in to a point in time, to an event that you might recall in your life where your instincts really kicked in. So, for example, let me give you a sense of my own, maybe playback in this. Before I moved down here to Florida a few years ago, I recall walking along the banks of the Chattahoochee River in Atlanta. It's a trail along the River Park there. And a friend that I was walking with suddenly, out of the blue, just said, "Watch out," just as I was about to step on a very large copperhead snake. Big, big, big one, big girth to it. And I instinctively jumped without any thoughts, any kind of rational mind consideration at all. I kind of really just leaped, got out of the way, off the trail, and really did avoid any kind of contact for sure. Didn't land on it, and most importantly, didn't get struck, wasn't bitten by that snake. And I maybe even a similar thing here on barefoot a week or so ago on Siesta Key, walking the beach after dark, lots of jellyfish that we had at that point in time, and just sort of sensed with my toes as I was kind of moving forward on it about the time that I could have just definitely sort of stepped full bore onto a jellyfish, sort of instinctually at that point just bounded away at the same time, sort of the same thing. Perhaps with the snake example. But what I'd like you to do as we begin today is to think for yourself, get an example from your own life, and actually sense into it, recognize what went on, recognize your physical sensations, perhaps your emotions, your thoughts, and maybe as we start, really get connected to that experience, tune into it, and perhaps to that felt sense of it, because I think that what actually still stays with you might actually be useful to try to bring into what we're starting with today. Because up close and personal, as I start today, I'm really trying to do it as an opener to the focus of our show again on instincts, on instinctual drives, on instinctual dimensions of our brain, and on instinctual intelligence. And most importantly, because of the backdrop of our show here on Zoomed, on the relationship between these instincts and our leadership. And how do our instincts and our instinctual dimensions both serve us, as maybe my example and your experience, but how also might they limit us? Limit our openness, constrain our capacities to unfold, maybe the full realm of our intelligence that's possible, and how might we both recognize reality of what is really going on with our instincts and act in ways that support the full unfoldment of our leadership capacities and our potential. And recall that we did a couple of shows on this 2 years ago. Ted Usatinsky joined us on the subject May of 2011, June of 2011 as well. But I think this is important enough because of the unconscious nature of what's involved here, and because actually so little is actually out there in the leadership realm, the leadership literature. Really, it's not really brought forth in the way that I think it's most important to bring forward. And I'm pleased to say we have Ted back with us again today. But let me take a moment just to make a bigger bridge from last show, and maybe even a little more of a context before I bring Ted on, just to frame our continuing leadership conversation. And recall last time what I talked about was the nature of a perfect storm, Rubini's perfect storm, the three dimensions that I talked about to even expand on it. I talked about some of the sagging economic balloon that were realized in living into the fiscal cliff, the European situation, the nature of the Middle East and Iran and what's going on there, the possibility of the conflict, and also pointed or reflected the possibility of concern that might be brewing, maybe the fear that was there, and certainly from some of the emails I got, the sense that certainly that was the case for some of you. A perfect storm of concern, perhaps fear arising, just as I could feel the instinctual sense of fear in my mother last week as I experienced in visiting with her how she's largely consumed during the day by Fox News and the conservative radio show hosts that she listens to, maybe six or eight of them, and their ongoing stimulus to the fear kind of in their broadcast at large. And not to be one-sided, there's MSNBC that I looked at and listened to at the same time, which get a similar sense of the fear. Fear stimulated, laden with an us versus them perspective, and how difficult, even listening into that, about how difficult it is to take a stand against some of what the propositions and the ideological stands might be. So as we begin, perfect storms of concern, fear, and maybe even surprises. Surprises like candidate Romney experienced with 47% video within the last couple of weeks. But a perfect storm, fear, surprises, all of these dimensions can activate our instinctual drives, our instinctual responses, and all have a bearing, a potential impact on our leadership. And that, folks, is really important for us to understand. So today, as we go, one more thing, maybe even as we frame that, we've had this importance of the conversation for some time about instincts, but looking forward, the big view forward, what can we anticipate in the future? More surprises, or in a report I saw over the last couple of weeks, an era of surprise, as our United States Air Force has described it, in their own futures-oriented report about how to develop capacity within soldiers for the future, a mirror to new soldiers, to the new context of surprise, just as we've been talking about the new human, the new leader, and the context of the new world arising. So that's the backdrop, folks, and the importance that we bring forward and to bring Ted with us. I'm delighted. And maybe just to refresh those of you that don't know Ted, he's the founder and director of the organization Instinctual Intelligence, author of several books and papers. The prominent one we talked about is book Instinctual Intelligence, The Primal Wisdom of the Nervous System and the Evolution of Human Nature. Again, his degrees are from Harvard and Naropa. To me, actually, he really brings together and coalesces that realm of work in the world that is not being done, and Ted is really breaking ground on this. Ted, great to have you with us back on Zoom today.
Hi, John. Good to be here again.
Well, maybe, Ted, I start to allude a little bit to the reactive side of this and the response, and I also opened the thought about openness and the impact. Maybe is there a way you can start to frame it and help us think about kind of the offset and those differences and what's actually going on?
I think that's a good dichotomy, John, to really introduce our listeners to. And starting with the fact that our instinctual responses to any given situation, especially ones that are new, are scary, are challenging, and as you alluded to, the world today, you don't have to do much more than just turn on your news in the morning to find something that was unexpected and potentially problematic and could have impacts in your life, whether it's an economic crisis, government budget cuts and so on. There's always something that the media is alerting us to, and some of those are very real concerns. So for most people, that can trigger a fear response almost immediately. When we hear this and the way the media kind of maybe hypes it up or gets you to listen to, they have really good science about what is, how do the human brain responds to these situations to induce fear, to get you to what's called orient to what's being said on the media. Now, this is called the orienting response. It's a part of the human brain that tells us something new is happening, something we should pay attention to. Just as you said, if there's a snake that you're about to step on, or even your friend saying, hey, watch out when you're crossing a road, it can be, like we said, from the media. It can be something as just you're crossing the road and you hear a horn unexpectedly and you realize there was a car coming from a direction you didn't see or didn't look. Immediately when you hear that noise, you turn your attention towards it. So that's the basic fact of our instinctual responses, is we're geared to suddenly pay attention to an unexpected event in our environment.
And that can be a positive side to it on that, as we were describing, Ted, at the same
absolutely.
Time.
Absolutely. There's a survival response that thank God you didn't step on that copperhead. We might not even be having this show right now. You know, there is a great value to it. But remember, these instinctual responses were designed throughout the course of human evolution, where danger was often immediate. There were snakes right in the environment. There could have been a volcano suddenly or an earthquake. They didn't have science of prediction and news and warnings and everything like that. So much of our instinctual system is geared for immediate survival, to take some drastic action right in the present moment. But when we're inundated throughout our daily life with news and fearful commentary or words or amplified forms of aggressive speech and so on, we got to recognize that our brain is being triggered in these primitive survival responses that might not be so appropriate in this day and age and in your daily life, say when you're driving your kids to school. A very aggressive response to someone who cuts you off in traffic might not be the best idea.
Well, so it might not be, and it might actually close down something in some ways. I start to allude to the sense of openness, Ted. So what actually occurs then that would start to confine or constrain or contract the sense of openness in response that we might have? What happens there?
Well, at the most basic level, John, I want to introduce a kind of a concept or just a basic theme of what we can call instinctual shock, where something dramatic is happening in the environment and immediately you notice that your heart starts racing, you start breathing more heavily, you start sweating, you're alert, you want to know what's going on. And we've all had experiences like that through our life where there was some kind of crisis or emergency or a situation that we needed to have an immediate response to. The problem is that often these things are triggered, this response can be triggered by other events that don't call for such a immediate or survival-based response. And that can, to understand that, how our brain gets triggered into these survival responses that make us feel we need to do something or pay attention to something, we need to understand that modern media is very skilled at provoking these responses, and that we can get trapped in a certain pattern of responding that is very limited and not really realistic or objectively responding to the situation.
So what I'm hearing, Ted, is there's a survival context and this fear that's really generated in a sort of that response. But what I was actually talking about with the perfect storm last time is much more of a probabilistic orientation. It's not a tiger in the bush right there. And maybe when we come back, we can differentiate this a little bit more about the different nature of what's going on here and the similarity of response. And maybe we can dig in a little bit more into the nature of instinctual shock to give our listeners a better sense of that and explore that some more and the implication about leadership and the view that we take and how much in full the view might be, the extent to which it might be constraining our perspective from the balcony. But Ted, I hear the music in our ears. Maybe we take a short break and our opening segment here, folks. Come on back. Ted Usatinsky here with us today. We are talking about instinctual intelligence and leadership and much, much more today. Take a short break. Be right back.
When it comes to business,
you'll find the experts here.
Voice America Business Network. The Zoomed Leadership Conversation today, as well as shows both past and upcoming, are intended to illuminate perspectives on the great transition in motion, the extraordinary era of change that is affecting all of our personal lives, our organizations, our communities, and our governing institutions. Big shifts are happening, and more are coming. Some can be foreseen, but many are outside current paradigms of thought. All, however, ultimately will be shaped by new and expanding forms of leadership, capable of holding the widest possible views and the deepest forms of interconnection. Join Zoomed host John Schmidt weekly as he rides the rising wave of intelligence, moving us all toward a world of immense potential, dynamism, and economic, social, and environmental renewal. Zoomed is sponsored in part by Avastone Consulting, a source point for development of leadership and organizational resilience and sustainability for the last 25 years. Find John and his colleagues at Avastone via avastoneconsulting.com. There's a course offered on Seventh Wave Network that you never saw offered in college. One that provides information on how to transform ancient wisdom teachings into everyday life. You'll learn how to create from your spirit and explore the world with all of your senses. Participation is encouraged. Enroll in Spirituality 101, the course you can't afford to miss, with your host, Reverend Norma. Classes in session every Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 noon Pacific Time, in your favorite classroom, Seventh Wave Network.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Zoom Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. For more information about John and our program, visit avastoneconsulting.com. That's A-V-A-S-T-O-N-E consulting.com. Now, back to Zoomed Leadership.
Okay, back on Zoomed Leadership and Instincts and an Era of Surprise. Ted Usatinsky, our guest again, to really begin to explore this. And Ted, we started to at least lay out some of the sense, some of the neurological response, but I really put intentionally that kind of the orientation of the way the media is helping contribute to this survival, this kind of a fear response. And maybe we can pick up on that and start to tease that apart to understand some of what's going on in the brain in relationship to it.
Well, John, that's something that I think leaders need to know, that most of the sources of information we get in the popular media and increasingly in secondary media sources are very sophisticated in knowing what the brain pays attention to. And one of the things we pay attention to are threats and things that create a sense of fear in us. Mm-hmm. So knowing that, we can start to see how the media, whether they're liberal bias or conservative bias or more financially oriented or news oriented, politically oriented, whatever their perspective is, they need you to listen to make money. So there's a way that much of the information we receive has been developed and presented in a way to get you to pay attention to it and perhaps exaggerated. Hmm. And what it is they take something that has a probability of happening, such as you talked about the perfect storm, which is a very real set of complex financial, military, and political considerations happening throughout the world that could really create an economic chaos. But the way it's presented in some circles, whether they're blaming Obama for it or they blame different people in the Middle East, wherever the source of the blame is put, they want to make you afraid of it and to have someone to blame for it. Hmm. And this naturally incites some instinctual responses in us that can cloud our thinking. So I just want to put out there that most of the media that we're exposed to, even some of the things that might be accurate, often triggers our brain in a way that might make us feel compelled to have some kind of response, and we'll look more at the underlying brain physiology of it. But just to be alert that, in a sense, the media is really trying deliberately to manipulate its listeners.
Mm-hmm. So it's manipulating a response then, because there's something known, and at least in some general sense, as you're saying, about that we'll tune into something. It may not be sophisticated and more than that, but they're understanding that we will tune in.
Right. We'll tune in and we'll pay attention. So what this does, there's an area in the brain, it's in the midbrain, right above the brainstem, so it's a very primitive response. And this area of the midbrain called the para-aqueductal gray region, but we'll just call it the midbrain for short. In this area of the midbrain that all, not only mammals have, but reptiles, even as primitive organisms of fish, have this basic fear kind of alert response, that if there's a danger in the environment, they need to do something, take some kind of physical action to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And think of a fish, just seeing a larger fish, seeing a shark swimming out in the ocean. It sees a shark, it starts swimming the other way automatically. It doesn't think about it. It doesn't try to make friends with the shark. It doesn't try to analyze it or, you know, have some kind of, any kind of thinking. It just swims the other way. It's like a reflex.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing with a more advanced animals like a deer. When you see them, you come up to them close if you're walking or driving. All of a sudden, they're spooked. Boom. They run away instantly. They're just gone. They just take off. So it's that area of the brain, this kind of fight or flight mechanism that gets activated a lot of times in our life through watching different media, or it can be a high-pressure meeting that someone goes to, or a boss that's confrontational. A lot of things can trigger this response. And this response, this fight-or-flight response, it sets off a whole set of neurochemical reactions in our body. It's called a stress response. And the basic program of it, and what's kept humans alive for hundreds of thousands of years, is I need to take an immediate action. I need to either fight someone or I need to run away. Those are the two mm-hmm. responses. Mm-hmm. And again, 100,000 years ago, those were about the only two choices you had. There wasn't a lot of calm when you were confronted by a wild animal. Those are the only two choices that proved effective.
Mm-hmm. So then what's happening is that's getting activated. Although we're not, the tiger's not in the bush right outside our door. We have something, some larger context and some realm of understanding of some of the probabilistic kinds of events that could be coming, some of which could be more or less severe, but we're responding in those in the same way is what I'm hearing.
Exactly. Well, we respond through this stress response. It starts to create tension in our bodies. Our thoughts start racing. And we feel often some kind of anger or blame or aggression. And I think that's what a lot of the political media plays on both sides of the aisle, wanting to blame and criticize, make fun, diminish the other side. And if you listen to both sides of either Fox News or MSNBC and all the different media in between, it's always kind of a criticizing, blaming, making fun of the other person, showing how their point is ridiculous. It's an adversarial position.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something that the human brain understands and locks into. And, you know, we've been subject to tribal warfare. If you look at even chimpanzees, if you look at the whole primate line of evolution for 10 million years, our primate line has been having this kind of aggression between groups, between tribes. So we're very used to getting comfortable with that and seeing that as a realistic point of view. The brain can get locked into that anyway.
And so what we're doing then is just is acting and expressing this. I mean, it feels to me that if that's an instinctual response, the anger, the aggression, the blame, the mix of variations of that, then we're operating it out of a very instinctual level without much additional kind of a thoughtfulness or a larger view that might be played out. It sounds as if there's something more going on, and it actually sounds damaging at the same time, potentially damaging.
Exactly. It can take a big toll on the body. The incidence these days of heart disease, of anxiety disorders, depression, the toll that it takes on the nervous system can be quite, difficulty sleeping, all sorts of addictions and problems with a healthy and relaxed nervous system functioning, which is essential for a leader to kind of at times to convey a feeling like everything is okay, like we're at peace, we can relax, we can regroup, we can nourish ourselves. But the other difficulty that it presents in the immediate perspective, especially for a leader, is the fact that this stress response creates a tension pattern that wants the body wants to discharge it. It wants to take some action. And that can really get us into trouble, because what we find over and over again, and mistakes that are made in terms of leadership, in terms of our own daily lives, is we feel this enormous stress build up, and we want to discharge it somehow. We want to yell at somebody. We want to take some action to fix the problem, or in more primitive terms, we want to eliminate or reduce the threat.
So an example that, Ted, let's just take it to a personal level here, not even in the context of leadership, but if we're actively trading, we've got an investment in the market, and all of a sudden we're looking at our investment, and it's gone south all of a sudden, and we're going down, down, down right now, and we actually get on a stock chart, and we look at whatever we're looking at, and it's dropping off the table, we could get into an instinctual response, and to mitigate or to actually discharge what we're feeling there, we could just immediately execute a sell on that, lose thousands of dollars, as it may just be a blip that the market does. They go down, they go up, but it could be a real reaction to it. I mean, that's the kind of thing you're talking about. There's a time to not take action at the same time.
Exactly, especially when it goes against the fundamental better judgments that you have. The situation occurred with that last week. For you traders out there, or people who follow the stock market and the different trading activity around the Fed announcement that came out last week, there was a just before the Fed announcement, there was a big dip in not only the stock market but also in precious metals and gold, where it appeared to be falling down precipitously. And then moments later, the Fed came out and said, "Oh, we're going to start this whole new round of quantitative easing." And goodness knows, stocks and precious metals took off like a rocket. So one can be easily, in the moment, overcome by this sense of fear or shock or something going unexpected in a direction, and feel compelled to take an action and go against what you know to be the more fundamentally the case, what would be the larger concerns, longer-term concerns.
Mm-hmm.
We were also discussing the situation with Mitt Romney. And think of what it must have been like to be part of, from his point of view, whether you're for him or against him, just sitting in a room with his advisors, and someone comes in and say, "Mr. Romney, Governor Romney, somebody has taped you at a conference here, you know, several months ago, and you know, they were taping you with some candid remarks, and this is going to go public." Imagine what's the gut feeling that he's going to have at that minute. You know, oh no.
Yeah, that's right on. That's right on, Ted. And so what we're doing here, I'm hearing, Ted, is we're building recognition and some understanding of what's going on instinctually. We're starting with the instinctual shock here, about what happens, and the sense of what actually starts to occur with that stress response in the body, and then what can happen. And I hear the music in our ears, but maybe we can come back and build on this and get some further recognition about the emotional shocks and how we might understand and recognize those two dimensions, and then start to even think a little bit more about what do we do, how do we act, how do we engage and respond, recognizing this is going on. And that's what we want to do here, folks. We want to give a better sense of recognition and ultimately action. But let's tease this apart some more. Let's take a short break. Ted's going to continue to be with us, and let's pick up on this instinctual shock, and then even in the next segment go more into the emotional shocks and understand that and the amygdala and what's going on. But let's take a moment. Come back in a moment with Ted. Thanks.
Stocks, bonds, investment opportunities, financial news, and talk. We can help. Call us now toll-free, 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
Zoomed Leadership is sponsored in part by Cosmos Journal. the journal for world citizens creating the new civilization. More than just a publication, Cosmos is committed to informing, inspiring, and engaging the world in the transition to an emerging, sustainable, just, and compassionate global culture and civilization that works for all. For over 10 years, Cosmos has been a leading voice that tracks the deep systemic transformations already occurring at the margins of society as our institutions prove unable to serve the needs of the times. Published twice a year in print and digital, Cosmos includes leading-edge articles from social change leaders on the global commons, people power, global governance, new economics, collective intelligence, and cultivating the self. The impact of these paradigm-changing ideas is enhanced through stunning visuals and photographic stories that motivate to action. Start exploring Cosmos Journal and continue opening your perspectives about leadership and the emerging great transition at cosmosjournal.org. Join the Cosmos Leaders of Change and make a difference today. These days, everyone is looking for information on staying young, healthy, and fit. The Voice America Health and Wellness Network is here to help you on your quest to better health and a better you. We talk about everything from diet, fitness, and aging to substance abuse, personal growth, mental health, and much more. Learn from our experts who cover health and wellness from traditional and holistic perspectives. Tune in to the Voice America Health and Wellness Network. Healthy living starts here.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Zoomed Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. For more information about John and our program, visit avastoneconsulting.com. That's avastoneconsulting.com. Now, back to Zoomed Leadership.
Okay, back on Zoom today, Ted Usufinski with us. You can find Ted at instinctualintelligence.org to make sure you have that. I'll mention that later on as we go. But we are talking about leadership and instincts, understanding the nature of what's actually occurring within ourselves. There's an instinctual shock that can occur where we've been. There's an emotional shock. And maybe, Ted, we can pick up a little bit more and understand and recognize the nature of those shock conditions that can be there, and some of which, or much of which, is unconscious, to really get a sense of what's obscured relative to our view of the world because of the way that we're responding. But maybe pick up a little bit more on that, Ted. I know we're heading toward the emotional shocks. Maybe you can say something about that.
Okay. Well, let's make the continuum between the instinctual shock, which can be either dramatic events in our life where something clearly, where a loved one or a child or our own physical safety is in jeopardy, or something as, you know, worldwide as 9/11, mm-hmm. or again the kind of impending stories of this fiscal cliff that have been greatly publicized in the media. And we hear things, we don't always understand what they are, but something that makes us want to be afraid. And even the image of a fiscal cliff, like something that you're going to fall over, is designed, again, to activate areas of the brain that are very primitive, like a fear of heights, like very basic reflexes of fear.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is when our instinctual survival instincts get activated, it also continues on and it affects our emotions and our thinking. And that's really the critical point for leaders, is to see that when we're under some kind of instinctual duress and we're feeling this stress response, nervous and anxious, that our critical thinking can become impaired. Because we go down, when we're under threat, we have a kind of a limited set of responses that are kind of evolutionary programmed. We can blame, we can attack, we can run away. In some sense, they're a pretty limited option compared to the vast possibilities, the openness now that's presented in the world. So we really want to make a distinction about this instinctual and emotional activation and how it can create fixated patterns that we are habitual responses. and contrast that with if we're not so activated, if we're able to recognize that we're being swept away by our instincts and emotions, the kind of openness and opportunity that's available for more creative, out-of-the-box solutions.
Hmm. You know, our listeners can't actually see, because you've got a number of presentations and a multimedia way to array this, but if I could just even give a picture to our audience here, Ted, is that if we were almost thinking about little wires in our brains, mm-hmm. that there are limited number of those pathways that get activated in the responses relative to the full array of the wiring paths and whatever could happen in terms of very open thinking, but it gets routed very narrowly into just a few, and you show that very vividly in the multimedia presentation. But that's really what you're talking about. It's really limiting the pathways in which we're able to think.
Yeah, think of it this way. Think of the brain and the nervous system as kind of like a tree, where the trunk, where the brainstem, the most primitive parts, are kind of a one monolithic, kind of one substance, one directional. Route of nutrients up from the ground coming up through the trunk. And that's kind of our instinctual responses. They're based on the earth, living on the earth, and very primitive evolved responses, and they only kind of flow in one direction. But as you go up the tree and the branches start to thin out and you have leaves, they grow in all directions. And that would be more like the top of the brain, the cortex, which is the most recently evolved part of the human brain. In fact, there's a lot of evidence that points that only about 50,000 years ago did it really 100,000 to 50,000, sometime in there, all of a sudden we saw like a geometric exponential expansion of the number of brain cells and the volume in this area in the front, especially in the frontal lobes, that give us all sorts of more options that can override the basic program, the basic survival programs of the instincts, and find more creative, more adaptive, more open-hearted solutions, more human solutions and responses to any environmental situation.
So the instinctual shock, the emotional shock, is really routing us lower on the tree into very limited response pathways, as opposed to the multiplicity of potential options that could be infused by all kinds of other influences, creative, heart-centered, just a full flow of them. That's what I'm hearing on that, Ted. Is that right?
That's right, John. And the key part of this emotional response is the amygdala, which can be is instantly activated when the instinctual responses are triggered. The amygdala is kind of higher up in the brain and kind of what sends signals to the front part of our brain. Don't think too much, just react.
Mm-hmm.
That's its basic message. It doesn't have time. It's not concerned. It's trying to get you out of the way of the snake or move you out of the way of the tiger that might be coming down the path in the forest. But there's only one problem, that for the most part our day, we don't have snakes and tigers anymore threatening our survival. Many of us spend quite a bit of time staring at a computer screen, yet we're still projecting snakes and tigers onto that information in a way that's not really serving us, not really true, not adaptive, and not helpful us especially in leaders, to make good, accurate, creative responses to an ever-changing and surprising environment.
And so going back to where I was opening with this notion of reactivity and openness, what we're really talking about then is, through an understanding and recognition first of the instincts, we're understanding that so that ultimately through training and development, I suspect, and further practices, that we can open up to the full array of the potential of the tree as a whole, as opposed to be channeled in very narrowly.
Exactly, and that really needs to be trained. It needs to be trained in leaders, and as you alluded to an article we both shared about the Air Force and training officers for the future, how do they deal with increasingly surprising environments in a way that is truly what they called human-based decision-making, that entails the true objectives of the military establishment, or from the Air Force perspective, a very strategic and clear thought and moral-based program. I was surprised to hear their emphasis on morality and how to bring in appropriate, measured responses. Is very much a concern of this program, and I think that's exactly what leaders in this day and age need to do. They need to act to protect their companies, their interests, but at the same time, how do they bring forth their humanity? And that really comes by recognizing when they're being hijacked by emotional and instinctual responses.
So let's, maybe we can spend a couple of minutes here, Ted, in this segment talking about what we do if we recognize that we're being hijacked, and part of that's instinctual, part of that's an emotional reaction, we're being guided by something more primitive then. So maybe even start it from an individual standpoint, and I know we talked a little bit on this previous shows, but to bring this forward some, what is it that we might be doing to further develop ourselves in preparation for this era of surprise?
I think that's a great distinction, John, and we should start at the individual level, and then maybe in the next segment we can touch on the responses, what it's like to work in this in a collective situation in groups and as a leader among groups of people. But for an individual in our own bodies, that is always the place to start. And number one, it begins by educating oneself that many of the instinctual responses, the shocks of both on the instincts and the emotions, to learn to recognize them, to learn to pay attention to your body and recognize when you might be influenced or even hijacked by an emotional response, to have that kind of presence of mind. So first one is really learning to recognize the signs that, hey, I might be in the midst of a full-blown instinctual stress response, mm-hmm. and that it can be characterized by a feeling of agitation, anxiety, shortness of breath. You might notice your heart racing, your hands might feel a bit cold, a bit sweaty, your mouth might be getting dry. So just when you notice that you're having some kind of physiological reaction, you can bet that some kind of a basic instinctual program is being activated. And one of the number one things we teach people is when you're in the middle of this stress response, the number one thing to do is to take some breaths into your lower belly. Slow, long breaths into your lower belly. And that really helps lower the level of the stress response immediately. And just by slowing down and paying attention to it, you give yourself an opportunity just to say the words, hey, I'm having a stress response right here. I'm going to slow down. I'm going to take a breath before I pick up the phone and chew someone out, before I call a press conference to try to immediately discharge this stress that I'm feeling. I'm going to take a breath or two or three. And that's the number one step.
Hmm. And so it's really to try to then move us back into a more full realm of potential.
When you're working with someone closely that you're friends with or in a co-leadership position or a trusted a colleague, is to be able to identify with each other the fact, hey, boy, I'm getting really stressed out about this, or I'm feeling really angry. And just to communicate that to another person who's, you know, in confidence. It's not like you go telling your subordinates or, you know, making send out an email, but something just to be able to say those words also in conjunction with the breathing can have really take some of the high level charge out of the system.
So it really begins individually. We start individually. We're aware ourselves. We're able to connect with others, and then we're able to actually even think about this in a more of a collective environment. But the beginning you're talking about is doing something to really calm this response within ourselves.
Exactly, because if we're just caught up in it and responding just based on those patterns, we're more likely going to take action unless our life is at threat or your child's life is at threat. You might take action in a strategic sense that is just an attempt to do something to discharge the stress, the tension, without really thinking it through in a very sophisticated way.
And the net impact of that is probably far less effective than we want, and maybe even creating messes. And certainly in the world context we're in, we're looking for new solutions, and certainly we wouldn't be getting new solutions out of these reactive pathways out of the lower stem. But that's what I want to come back in a minute to talk about, Ted, is that what we might do collectively, because that takes us into this larger view of preparation as well. But I hear the music in our ears. Folks, let's take a quick break, come back for Ted for the last segment, talk a little bit more about the nature of training and the development we might do collectively, and then even close with some perspectives about what this might be opening up for us collectively in terms of a larger sense of intelligence that we can tune into. Come on back in a moment. Take a break. Last segment on Zoomed. Thanks.
Up-to-date business and financial news. Call now and get the financial information you need. 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790. The experts are here. Voice America Business Network.
Are you tired of the government squandering your tax dollars on bailouts and overpaid bureaucrats? On Free Markets with Dr. Mike Beitler, Mike Beitler and his guests explain why big government regulations are the problem and innovative businesses and free markets are the solution. Listen to Free Markets with Dr. Mike Beitler, Thursday mornings at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Business Network.
Think of the world 50 years ago. Now think of this same world and how it'll be 50 years from now. Did you know that if the world's population continues to grow at its current rate, our children and grandchildren will only have 25% of the resources per capita that our parents and grandparents had? We must preserve the foundation of a quality standard of living. That foundation starts with Go Green Radio. Join your host, Jill Buck, for Go Green Radio every Friday at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Voice America. Voice America Business Network. The bottom line in business. You're listening to Zoomed Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. For more information about John and our program, visit avastoneconsulting.com. That's A-V-A-S-T-O-N-E consulting.com. Now, back to Zoomed Leadership. You're listening to Zoomed Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. For more information about John and our program, visit avastoneconsulting.com. That's A-V-A-S-T-O-N-E consulting.com. Now, back to Zoomed Leadership.
Okay, back on Zoom, Ted Usatinsky, our guest today, last segment, instinctualintelligence.org, Ted's website to follow this and to track his book down and certainly much more. We're talking about leadership and instincts in this era of surprise, recognizing the instincts that are actually co-opting what's actually happening with us at an unconscious level. Ted, we started talking about practices, and before we go to the collective, I'm wondering if there are things that we can individually do as kind of a practice field to engage some of these responses and to learn how to work with them. Any other suggestions you have?
Well, certainly, John, for most of us, everyday life is often provocative enough, but it doesn't actually give us
that's for sure.
An opportunity to really study our responses, because sometimes they happen so quickly that it's not the place or the time. So what we recommend is putting oneself in situations that are a bit make you uneasy or frightened or a little bit anxious, but in a way as a way to investigate your own responses, such as maybe, you know, watching a horror movie or going for a walk at night in the dark or going for a drive or something that just is a little bit outside of your own comfort zone. And ideally to do this with a friend, a partner, a colleague, someone who wants to explore also, and get in the practice of really describing to each other what's happening in your bodies here and now as we walk down this path. And I can't really see where we are at night here, and I feel a bit anxious, and I feel like I'm putting my hands up, and I notice my heart's beating a bit faster. Mm-hmm. And just sharing with each other responses, normalizing the conversation about our instincts and our instinctual responses to make it part of the culture that you inhabit. And certainly for a leader, if you work among a group of managers or have people under you directly, to encourage them to express their instinctual responses and not to act like, oh, I have everything under control and I'm always cool, calm, and collected, but to begin to create a culture where that's shared, especially under stressful conditions, can go so far to building a culture and a community and a real trust in each other that you can mm-hmm. communicate about this and attempt to be more objective and to help clarify thinking and responses that we all need to make in the world.
I like it, Ted. I like it. I like the tangibility of that. And you started also then with someone else. You started talking maybe to the collective level. Are there thoughts here on this closing segment about development in that context?
Well, John, that's something that really, I think, gets to the heart of your show about leadership in the 21st century. And I can't stress enough how difficult it is for a person in a position of leadership to kind of go against the tribe or to go against the herd on an instinctual level and stand up and say, you know, we're not going to go down this negative attacking route. We're not going to give in to fear. We're not going to go with the predominant way that when the whole group is afraid, to be able to stand up and have the psychological and emotional maturity to practice saying, hey, no, I'm going to differentiate my nervous system from the rest of the herd. It's a very difficult thing because humans evolve to be kind of live in a group consensus. And it's been the great leader throughout history, from everyone from Winston Churchill to FDR, Abraham Lincoln, and I'm sure going back in time, that were able to say in some way, I know that you're all afraid, but I'm not afraid, or I recognize that we could be afraid, but I'm going to propose something different. I'm going to be different from the rest of the tribe, the rest of the herd. I'm going to make my voice heard in a way that's different and offers a new solution than just the habitual instinctual responses of fear and violence and greed also. Imagine what our leaders today, if either Obama or Romney or anyone on this world stage would just stand up and start to differentiate and say, hey, I'm not going to go along with what we've done in the past. Hmm. And I'm going to present a different narrative, a different alternative. It would be so powerful and such an opportunity. And I think that many of us who are in leadership positions probably have those opportunities more than we recognize.
So what I'm hearing is there's one aspect of it, which is taking our seat in leadership in this coming world and in the cycles of expansion and exponential change and all the shifts that are coming. But what I'm hearing is it's taking your seat, but then it's being able to stand up. And that stand up is going to really stress this instinctual response to go against the tribe, which is going to activate something within us, which is difficult. Going against the tribe is a big thing. And
it
so
is.
That's
and
part
that,
of what we have to
that,
stand
that
with. That's part of
fear
taking the
deep
stand.
Deep in our brainstem and that midbrain area that we talked about, and that's the fear of being socially isolated.
Hmm.
To go against the great, go against the consensus, go against the collective nervous system of any group or organization is a real test of true mature leadership.
Hmm. So I'm hearing that's the test of mature leadership to be able to stand up, but it's also to stand up then and not be activated. It's to be in sort of the flow, but it's then allowing ourselves to be open to a further field of the outer reaches of the tree that you're describing that are going to bring in fresh perspectives. And I'm wondering, as we're starting to work into a close here, Ted, if you can say a little bit about that, because this is a level of intelligence even that is more than just what we know. It's inviting what we don't know in a new level of intelligence or further level of intelligence.
Exactly, John. It's beginning to free ourselves from the useful and involved intelligence that is just the basis of our nervous system, the instinctual responses that we've learned, in order to calm them enough to be open to areas of knowing, of forms of intelligence and feeling and awareness and of consciousness that go far beyond our own human bodies. And that is available, the collective wisdom of humanity and the collective intelligence of the entire universe, the universal intelligence, if you will, that you've often alluded to, that goes beyond any one of our individual minds. But again, if we're just embedded in our habitual instinctual responses, we just don't pay attention or have the capacity to sense and to witness and to be a part of this broader sense of intelligence.
Well, Ted, I hear the music in our ears, and you just have said it well, where I think we have the potential on the show to really bring to light is the nature of the presence that's unfolding and how it's unbound, it's freed, it's really flourished in the larger sense of possibility and infused with a sense of universal intelligence and newness and freshness and dynamism. That's certainly the direction of the show. But Ted, again, thanks for coming on and talking about this. I know we're about to close here, but maybe 15 seconds and the last piece of your thought of the day here.
Well, John, I just want to close by saying it's not just about changing our minds and opening our minds, but it's becoming really an instinctually embodied force of intelligence, of empathy and action in the world that we can really bring forth the best of our human potential.
Beautifully said, Ted, and I point our listeners again to instinctual intelligence, the primal wisdom of the nervous system and the evolution of human nature, and also to go to your website where they might get some sense. You'll be doing some presentations in San Francisco, in Boulder, Colorado, in the Easton, Connecticut next year. I think they're very interesting and stimulating and breakthrough, and moreover, they are going to give you a sense of what is not talked about in the leadership literature. It is the depth of what is confining the potential and the openness that we're talking about. Ted, great to bring this to the table once again. I think we have to continue further with another show on this, but delight to have you with us again today.
Great. Thanks so much, John.
Okay, folks, we'll see you next time. Continue this conversation on the depth of our potential, the reality of what gets in the way, what is going on in the world at the big picture, how we up close and personal engage it, and how we're actually living into a desirable future, the new world, the new human, intersecting together, engaged through our own leadership. Have a great week, folks, and as always, enjoy. Come on back to Zoom. Much more to come. Thanks.
Thank you again for listening to Zoomed Leadership with host John Schmidt. Please be sure to join us again next Monday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. And have a terrific week.